plan ahead and run the whole Democracy Now 4-hour coverage, which started an hour ago. Wouldn't want to preempt. But I'll preempt myself and encourage you to check it out, and also have the address of that place. Apparently there's some kind of monsoonal rain being predicted, 4 inches of rain. Yeah, definitely check your higher ground. All right, we're going to go cut in right on as it's going out live here. Looks like somebody's doing a top of the hour intro on the Democracy Now! Coverage of the Climate March, followed last week on the Science March. I just wonder how that all happened. But the more the better, I guess.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. The People's Climate March is where we are right now, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. At this moment, it is not clear how many people have descended on Washington. Is it 1,000? Is it 10,000? We know it's more. Is it tens of thousands, perhaps 100,000? We are broadcasting throughout these 5 hours, from 10 in the morning Eastern Time to 3 in the afternoon. We're broadcasting on satellite television throughout the country, on TV and radio stations, and right here online at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman, joined right now by two indigenous leaders. We're joined by Tom Goldtooth, who is one of the founders of the Indigenous Environmental Network, and Candy Mossett. Candy Mossett is, well, the last time I saw her, we were on a sacred burial ground in North Dakota. The Dakota Access Pipeline guards had been trying to excavate it when hundreds of Native Americans came up on that property and demanded the bulldozers pull back. Candy, that was quite a scene, quite a horrific scene. Yeah. But on that day, the Native Americans who were out there did stop the bulldozers from excavating.
That's right, and it was really women that broke down the fence, tore it down, went out there and jumped in front of the bulldozers, because we physically feel that pain when we see that machine digging. And they did destroy 3 sacred sites and some grave sites, but we stopped them from destroying more. And it's important to note that there's no oil flowing through that pipeline. They actually had damage occur when they dropped their own equipment into the trench and damaged 10 sections of the pipe, stuff that nobody's reporting on. After the camps were cleared, they damaged their own pipeline. So the spirits are still with us. I have a feeling they pushed the equipment into the pipe, into the trench. So
there you are in North Dakota. Here you are in D.C. Why?
I'm here because it's important to do everything we can do. A march is one thing in the many tools in the toolbox. This is a really good way to come together and say we're not alone in this movement for jobs, for climate justice. And so we need to do these things to show that number 45, we don't agree with your policies. We're going to be in your face until you listen to the people. The people that want a different way, which is towards renewable energy, small-scale distributed renewable energies, and to listen to the voice of the people.
Where are you from?
I'm from North Dakota, right in the heart of the Bakken Shale oil formation, where they're fracking us literally to death because our babies are sick, our grandmas are sick. We're not going to take it anymore, so we've been here drawing that red line of resistance.
You're a member of what tribe?
Mandan, Hiradza, Arikaran Nations.
I last saw you before Dakota I saw you in Paris after North Dakota.
And I told you about the abuses that have been occurring to our women. And it's an inextricable link between the rape and the abuse of the earth that happens to the women as well when these extractive industries come into our communities. It's very important that people know that we don't just speak for the North, we speak for our brothers and sisters to the South. Look at what happened to our sister, Berta. It's important that we get the message out that it's not okay for our women to die simply because we want to protect water. And we're going to continue to stand up and hold our relatives in our hearts and our minds.
You're holding up the sign for Berta Cáceres, the Honduran environmental leader who knew she was on a death list, but continued her work until she was gunned down in her own home.
That's right. And if Berta can do these things and her spirit can live on, there's no reason that we can't. can't continue to fight here in this colonized United States. We need to stand strong with our brothers and sisters.
Had you ever met Berta Cáceres?
I never had the pleasure of meeting her in person. It was after that we went to Honduras and that we were able to see her family and friends and learn about her legacy. So I cry tears that aren't about sadness, but the joy that her spirit continues to live on and really created strength in a lot of us women.
You're wearing a t-shirt that says defend the sacred.
Defend the sacred, because everything that we believe in, that we need as humanity, is sacred. The air, the water, and the soil, with which we can't live without. Common sense dictates defend the sacred.
Who will you be marching with today?
I will be marching with my ancestors today and with my three-year-old daughter, Ayana, who is here not fully understanding what it's all about, but it's really all about her.
Tom Goldtooth, you're standing beside Candy right now. Talk about your activism that has led to this day, April 29th, that it looks like it promises to be one of the hottest April 29ths in Washington, D.C. history.
Yeah, it's part of a prophecy that many people that I work with, I've been fortunate to meet many spiritual leaders, people who are gifted to be able to communicate with that spirits of Mother Earth and Father Sky. And both my Navajo Dene people are Dakota people. And, you know, we've been part of this move, building of a movement of resistance, and it's a spiritual resistance. I've been at the United Nations climate negotiations, and I've been at the World Social Forums, and I've been in our local communities, really building a movement of consciousness. And this is where it's coming to, this moment where we're breaking down those silos that basically capitalism, industrial mindset has created a divide of people from Mother Earth. And so we have to break that and be able to talk to humanity, that we need to come back to understanding where we're at right now. And this president right now represents tyranny. This president represents a system that is old and has to change. And as indigenous peoples, you know, we've been talking about this moment. You know, maybe we as original people of the United States and our people in Canada, Alaska, maybe it's time to really exercise our sovereignty and our self-determination and serve papers on this president to deport him from this country, because the laws that he's representing are not the natural laws that we're taught as Native people to have respect for the sacredness of water. That's why we are here. We're bringing frontline communities who are fighting to keep fossil fuels in the ground. That's part of our campaign, but not just ours as indigenous. It's for all people to come to that consciousness that we have to change a system. We have to move to a new reality, and that reality is part of Mother Earth.
What is the lesson you've learned from the Dakota Access Pipeline? The struggle clearly isn't over. There's this national and global divestment campaign to divest from the financial institutions that support it. The pipeline is not flowing with oil.
Right. And we've been able to bring that message from Standing Rock, from Ocheti Shokowi, and I apologize, I'm going to have to leave here in a couple seconds, but part of that is showing America and people of the world have gravitated to the messaging coming out of Ocheti Shokowi, the Council of the Seven Sioux Nation. And that message is a spiritual message. That message is to come back to understanding that water is life. The woman carrying that life, the passing of that water, that's what that symbolizes in the translation that really misses its point in English. But the water of life, the passing of the water when the birthing process is about. And that is really a profound spiritual relationship that people are starting to gravitate to throughout the world. So it's, again, the message coming there that we can do this through peace and prayer.
Tom, where were you born and what nation are you with?
I am Navajo. My mother's Navajo, and my father, they say, was Dakota. So I have embraced both cultures, and I was born way in the remote areas of the Navajo Reservation, northern part, where they have a big dam.
And finally, the significance of this march today.
That's right. That's right. Has manifested this point. And my son right now, Dallas, is...
Dallas, are you trying to interrupt this interview?
Yeah. I need to get him going to another meeting.
Another meeting.
You guys look alike.
That's Amy from the ground. There's a package that opens up the coverage on the Democracy Now! Website. I had the Free Speech Radio, Free Speech TV ready to go. Bill McKibben is talking about the round dance demo in front of Trump International, where they're projecting resist slogans on the Trump towers. Let's go to the Democracy Now! Website coverage now that I got it up.
Organizing, and they run the whole spectrum. In the lead, as usual, will be environmental justice groups, indigenous groups, the people who've really been leading this fight from the start. A really big addition this time around is large, large participation by the labor movement. You know, people have tried to make out that there's a split between environmentalism and labor over the years. And if that was ever true, it becomes less so all the time. Groups like SEIU and the nurses and the transportation workers and everybody just flooding in for this fight. It's going to be, well, it's going to be not carried out in the hope that we can convince Donald Trump to do something different. We can't. And the GOP in Congress, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry, isn't going to do anything either. We're well aware of that. What we're doing is laying down the most serious of markers about the future. And one of the numbers that will be on everybody's lips is 100, as in 100% renewable energy. Yesterday, I stood with Jeff Merkley, the senator from Oregon, and Bernie Sanders, who I think may come from the very state that you're in today. And they put forward really a landmark piece of legislation. For the first time, they said, we need 100% renewable energy. Not we need some solar panels and we need some fracking wells. Not the all-of-the-above energy policy that the Obama administration favored. Instead, finally saying, we're ready to go 100%. The technology is clearly there. The price of a solar panel keeps plummeting, which is why it's so absurd to watch Donald Trump try to somehow revive the expensive and dirty coal industry. We're ready to go, and now we've got, I think, what's going to be the flag around which progressives rally. Nothing less than 100% will do.
A new Washington Post article is headlined, "The Company Behind the Dakota Access Pipeline is in Another Controversy." It details how Energy Transfer Partners, the company behind the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, has now twice spilled drilling fluids in Ohio wetlands this month while constructing the $4.2 billion gas pipeline, the Rover Pipeline, which is slated to stretch from Appalachia to Ontario, Canada. One of the spills included 2 million gallons of drilling fluid. Bill McKibben, your response.
I guess I can't say that it comes as an enormous surprise, Amy. Look, there have been any pipeline company you look at, TransCanada, Energy Transfer Partners, they all have a long list of these kind of spills, some of them a few thousand gallons, some of them a few hundred thousand gallons. That's precisely why people at Standing Rock were so right to say, do not put this across our water supply. We know what will happen. We don't know the day that it will happen, but we know that it will happen. And that's why people are standing up again to fight the Keystone Pipeline in Nebraska, in South Dakota, in Montana. Everyone's well aware of what this industry is about. It engages not only in those kind of practices, polluting people's water, but it's polluted our political life now for a quarter century. One of the really powerful things that's going on in this country right now is watching attorney generals like Eric Schneiderman in New York and Maura Healey in Massachusetts take on the oil companies that systematically have lied. The Exxon is the main, mainly in the crosshairs right now, that have systematically lied for a quarter century, and those cases are advancing. A New York judge has taken the Exxon case under her wing now, and I think we're going to see remarkable, well, I think we're going to see remarkable disclosures about all the things that they knew all along.
Mm. The significance of 410 parts per million, I mean, your group is called 350.org based on 350 parts per million.
So anything greater than 350 parts per million is more than the planet can safely deal with. It's what's overwhelming our climate system. Because as you say, we were going up about 3 parts per million per year. And 2 days ago, for the first time in, we think, at least 5 million years, the planet broached the 410 parts per million level. Now, you know, it'll go down for a while and then back up. And you know, eventually we'll always be above 410 and then above 420 and above 430. We just keep pouring more carbon into the atmosphere. And the toll it's taking is now not some future or abstract threat. It's what happens every day. You know, the latest numbers we have for March are for March. They show that March was the fourth warmest month that we have records on, dating back to the 1880s, and the warmest month in a non-El Nino period. That is to say, we're kind of in a permanent El Nino now. The temperature is always elevated. March saw record lows for the date in global sea ice. That's really, really scary. We're melting some of the biggest physical features on our Earth. But it's not just remote places. I mean, Pakistan, which is always a pretty hot place, crushed all its heat records a couple of weeks ago. It was 122 degrees in April. Up in Siberia, this year's massive, massive wildfires began in April. These are not good signs, not at all, not for billions of people on this Earth who are living close to the edge. I think the place maybe to watch with the greatest worry right at the moment and to try to help the most may be those parts of Africa around Somalia that are enduring a climate-caused and really record-breaking drought. The Times said not long ago that it may be the greatest humanitarian crisis since the end of World War II. And of course, where humanitarian crises happen, so do political instability. This is the world that we're building and building fast, and it's the world that people are trying somehow to slow down. That's what this march on Saturday is about. That's what this bill introduced yesterday by Merkley and Sanders are about. We're looking for the cracks in the Death Star, trying very hard to bring down this fossil fuel machine before it does any more damage.
Well, that's Bill McKibben from Democracy Now! From yesterday. I don't know how exactly that happened. I'm going to cut in here and say we'll go back to what's happening on the ground. The Sheldon Whitehouse, a senator from Rhode Island, is speaking now. I think I'm going to wait until after he's made a pause. The local Champaign-Urbana's People's Climate March is 2 to 4 nominally, and starting in about 4 hours with a good chance of rain. I don't know if it'll be monsoonal, as everybody's been wondering about, with a 4-inch rain predicted. Grace Lutheran Church, 313 South Prospect Avenue. Is that about Prospect in Springfield area, I think? So that's 2 to 4. If you're join in a church or some activities, I don't have any details about how to find it, but I'm sure there'll be signage at 2 o'clock. Okay, let's see if I can get back to the program that's actually going out on Democracy Now! Live. And I guess it was okay to frame it with Bill McKibben. But here is indeed Sheldon Whitehouse grabbing the mic.
They will not stop this all-electric vehicle revolution. They will not stop. this energy efficiency revolution. They will not tell the green generation any longer that they are not going to have a planet that is safe and clean and non-polluting. The planet is running a fever. There are no emergency rooms for planets. The only way to do this correctly is to put the preventative programs in place with the renewable energy revolution that will save the planet from the worst, most catastrophic effects. And you know what? The green movement does not agonize. The green movement organizes, and that's what is happening here today, not just here in Washington, but all across the country, because there is one thing that is separating the oil and coal industry on every one of these issues from the green movement on every single issue. We are right and they are wrong.
And then this is actually Ed Markey now from Massachusetts. Bill that was just talked about.
The oil and coal industry on every one of these issues from the green movement on every single issue. We are right and they are wrong. And the Koch brothers must be sent a message that their science, which Donald Trump has adopted, is just as bogus as a degree from Trump University. We have to make sure that they know that science is what this country is all about, and that we are going to fight for science every single day until Donald Trump is no longer the president of the United States. Thank you all for being here. Let's go out there and do the job.
Five years ago, the Atlantic Ocean was 10 degrees warmer than it should normally have been, and the following week, Hurricane Sandy hit the coast and it devastated a New York district. And the representative, the congresswoman from that district, has been a champion on taking on climate change. Nydia Velasquez, yeah. Welcome.
I'm here. Thank you, Senator. Thank you so much. Thank you. To tell, you know, coming from New York, I'm Congresswoman Nydia Velasquez. I represent the waterfront in Brooklyn and Manhattan. I was a victim. My community, the low-income communities, were devastated. It is shameful that the president who comes from New York could deny that climate change is an environmental issue. It's not fake news, Mr. President. We know. We saw it. And this is why I am here today. This is an inspiration to see so many young people, seniors, women, Black, Latinos, Native Indian, fighting to make sure that we resist, that we reject the ill policies coming out of this administration. It is shameful that what we see, the prerequisite for the presidents to make any appointment to lead any of the federal agencies is how much that person hates or is committed to destroy the very agency that they are going to lead. And we are here to say, not under our watch. It will not stand. It will not stand. So to all of you, thank you. We must organize, we must resist, and today we march. God bless you. Thank you so much.
Have you heard of a former attorney general from Oklahoma named Scott Pruitt who wants to tear down? Some attorney generals are using their position in partnership with the fossil fuel cartel to destroy the planet. And some are using their position as attorney general to save the planet. And Maura Healey is one of the most powerful voices using the law to take on groups like Exxon. I introduce to you a real legal champion and force, Maura Healey. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Merkley. I am so honored to be here today at the People's March, be with all of you, be with all these tremendous leaders who have spoken out, who have stood up, and who are here today in solidarity with all of you. As a state attorney general, my message is simple. This administration has engaged in an all-out assault on the environment, climate, and science. And I am here today, my message to the president and my message to Scott Pruitt is this is not going to happen on our watch. We will resist, we will stand up, and we will not stand by and allow you to dismantle the important progress that has been made and the work that we need to do as we go forward. As states, we know how important this is. We've done this before, we'll do it again. 2 weeks ago, we celebrated the 10th anniversary of Massachusetts versus EPA. Massachusetts sued George Bush's EPA for its failure to deal with greenhouse gases. We went up to the Supreme Court and we won. We've done it before and we will do it again. Because to be clear, federal law requires those in powers to protect our residents, to protect our environment, to ensure fuel efficiency standards and all the important work that has been done. This is an the most important issue of our time right now, folks. And I am here to say, as the people's lawyer to the people's marchers, yes, let's get out there, let's raise our voices, and let's send a message to Washington that no one is above our law and that this is about our planet, our future, and humankind. I am with you and so proud to be with all of you. Thank you for all you do.
I got chills.
Laura, thank you, thank you. Who's above the law? No one. Who's above the law?
No one.
Who's above the law?
No one.
Thank you all so much. We're going to have time for a couple of questions if anyone from the press has one. Yes, sir.
After today, what's the most important step for people to take to mitigate climate change?
After today, what is the most important step for people on climate change? We need to take the energy here. We need to take this people's energy. We need to go back to our communities. We need to go to every organization we're part of.
Well, Sheldon Whitehouse,
every city
there
council,
he is.
We have to say we need 100% by 2050 resolution and an action plan on what we're doing this year, the next year, and the year after. And then we need to continue to fill the streets, to overflow the phones here, to fill the mail slots and keep the pressure up and run for office. Please, run for office. Let's take this people's power and build it right up until we retake control of the building behind us.
Yeah, that's my sentiments exactly. It's 2050 is a little modest for 100% renewable. I had Free Speech TV up as well, and it's because I noticed last week for the Science March that sometimes Democracy Now! Won't be available, so it's alternately being streamed on Free Speech Radio News. Maybe some other units too, but it seems to have overloaded the circuits. Here's White House answering a shouted out question, which you probably wouldn't have heard anyway.
Yes, right.
Here's
here.
Amy.
Right here. How do you challenge the Trump administration with so many climate deniers in positions of power, from Scott Pruitt to the Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, former head of ExxonMobil?
Any college you want to jump in first, Tom? Sure.
Senator Carper.
If you couldn't hear what she's, how do we take on all these climate deniers? I want to tell you, most of the people in here in the Senate are not climate deniers.
Yes.
And my guess is that most of the folks on the other side of the aisle are not climate deniers. We have an obligation. There's a lot of people in EPA are hurting right now. They've given their life's work to trying to protect our air, our water, our health, and they are hurting. What happened last night is just despicable and awful. Let's make sure that the folks at EPA that we have their back. Let me say, we got your back. Let's say to the folks, the scientists at NASA, we've got your back.
We got your back.
Say to the scientists at NOAA, we got your back.
We got your back.
We're not going to back down. We're going to stand our ground, but we won't back down. That's it. We're not going to give up. We're going to win this fight. We're going to win. We're right.
United. Thank you.
One more question. Anyone? Okay, thank you.
Hemp is a miracle crop in the land. It's not raw,
it's not hemp.
Jeffrey.
Thank you so much, everyone, for gathering for the People's Action March. Let's go and change the world and save the planet. Thank you.
So those were
the senators, Senator Merkley, Senator Carper, Senator Whitehouse, Senator Markey, Congressmember Nydia Velazquez, and Senator Maria Cantwell. Also, Maura Healey, who is the Attorney General of Massachusetts. We're going to turn right now to, let's see if we can ask a person right here. Can I ask you a quick question from Democracy Now?
Sure.
Your name?
My name is Aaron Mayer.
And you are?
I am the national president of the Sierra Club.
Talk about what the Sierra Club feels needs to be done. These are elected leaders. They have their constraints. What do you think their job is, and what do you think your job is? Our camera is right over here.
Well, one of the things that we can do right now is back those senators, as I say, and pushing back. When this 100 days ago, the president came on these very steps and talked about American carnage. But the carnage he meant was American corporate carnage and savagery of our regulations, our laws, and our protective environmental agencies and public health agencies. Right now, he's pushing for a $10 billion financing of a border wall. He is pushing for, right now, as they say, a tax break on the credit card of the American public. All these breaks, all these investments absolutely can be going into clean energy and clean jobs right now. The issue is not playing in a predatory way upon the desperate needs of unemployed coal miners and coal workers, but how we put them back to get to work and, as I say, push forward clean energy and clean technology. Right now, we should not be opening up the continental shelf of the Atlantic coast to more offshore drilling. In fact, we should be swapping out every single offshore drilling rig for wind power. Block Island, Rhode Island, has the first installation of offshore wind. Right now, our Congress can push for the swap out of clean energy for dirty energy. And guess what? There'll be enough gigawattage produced that we'll probably be able to shut down nuclear on the eastern seaboard. Right now, our Congress is the bulwark. But in order to do that, we must have a functioning democracy. And a functioning democracy means that we must have, as they say, those who are not pushing for voter suppression throughout the South and reapportionment maps that, as I say, keep in power those who are beholden to the carbon industry. These congressmen right now can put a true America first, but the America first is not about foreign entities, it's about domestic enemies and domestic oil industry enemies that are basically circumventing our democracy and unleashing what we call the corporate carnage.
So you are, Aaron Mayer, an epidemiological spatial analyst, environmentalist, current president of the Sierra Club, founded by John Muir, famous environmentalist in California.
Yes.
What do you think John Muir would be demanding today?
John Muir would be demanding that it's saying, as his prophetic words, that it is all connected. You cannot pull at one segment of the environment, one segment of society, and think that it will have no impact on the whole. We're all one. John Muir right now would be right here. He would be standing by Martin Luther King. He would be standing right all the leaders of justice and saying we have one humanity and that all humanity must come together to save the planet. This is no longer an outing to save Yosemite. This is an outing here. The masses are coming out to save the planet. John Muir would be on this great outing, on this great trek, leading this resistance.
Well, I want to thank you very much
for being
with us. Senator Markey, I just want to ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
I'm Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!, public television radio program. Massachusetts, how is it affected by climate change? And what do you say to President Trump about this?
Well, the most important environmental decision in the history of the United States was made by the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision in April of...
That's okay. Lots of people talking. It's a big march. Hey, keep going.
Okay, good. Yeah. Massachusetts sued the EPA, and in April of 2007, the Supreme Court ruled that Massachusetts was right, that the EPA had to make a determination as to whether or not greenhouse gases were endangering the coastline of Massachusetts, eroding the coastline. And they ruled that the EPA had a responsibility to make an endangerment finding of whether or not that was happening, and if it did, that they had to begin to put rules in place in order to protect against that damage.
So what do you say to President Trump today?
Marking his words, Markey is.
Donald Trump should worry about what his obituary says. And if in 20 or 25 years we have catastrophic storms, ice caps melting, millions of people endangered all across this planet, and he stood on the sidelines and made that kind of a catastrophe possible, that is all that he is going to be remembered for. If he wants to go down as a great man, he has to take on the greatest challenge of our generation, and right now, he is just walking away from that fight.
So this 100 days, in the last few days, he's issued a number of executive orders, including opening up public lands to drilling, from offshore drilling to the Arctic. Do these executive orders have power? Is he dismantling the regulatory state? Is he succeeding?
Each one of those executive orders will be taken to court by the attorneys general, by the Sierra Club, by NRDC. They're in for a huge, historic legal battle right up to the Supreme Court. And ultimately, I think we are going to prevail on those cases, especially when it comes to drilling off of the coastline of New England. We want it to be George's bank, not Shell's bank. We don't want this to be turned into another drilling opportunity that could result in a BP oil spill off of our New England coast. Trump doesn't seem to care, but I think the people in New England and all across our country are not going to run that environmental risk. They're going to fight every single day.
Before you head off to the People's Climate March right now, certainly nuclear war is a threat to the environment. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask you about the increasing tensions with, well, everywhere from Iran, but specifically this week to North Korea. Did you go to the White House to get briefed by President Trump? Yes. What did he say? Why did you go? And what do you feel needs to happen?
Well, President Trump didn't really give us his plan in the White House when we went down to meet with him. And in truth, his plan is incoherent. On one day, his Secretary of State says that, well, we want to move more towards negotiation. But on the very next day, the president says that we could actually be moving more towards a great, great crisis with North Korea that could involve, he doesn't say it, but an exchange of nuclear weapons. So we want to walk away from that kind of a conflict. We want to be talking to the North Koreans. We talked to the Soviet Union. We avoided a nuclear catastrophe. We have to be talking to the North Koreans. The president is refusing to do that. We need to put tough sanctions on the Chinese, and the Chinese in turn put those sanctions on the North Koreans, bring the North Koreans to the table with President Trump, and that's the only way to reduce the tensions to avoid an accidental nuclear war breaking out, because right now both sides has military maneuvers that are taking place that could wind up in a catastrophe because a tripwire got crossed that neither side knew that they were passing.
And before you go, though, it's not the subject of this day, the tax plan, your assessment of what President Trump put forward this week.
The president's tax plan is more like a request on April 15th for a tax extension. So what he did was he gave us a single sheet of paper with no details in it, except that he wants huge tax breaks for billionaires, for millionaires, drain the revenues $4 to $7 trillion out of the federal treasury, and that would then put tremendous pressure on Social Security, on Medicare, on education programs, on Head Start, which is really their plan, to get the revenues out, give the tax breaks to the wealthy, and then take away the programs for the poor in our society.
And finally, I'm looking at your attorney general right behind you. We just interviewed her. And she is suing ExxonMobil. She is trying to hold them to account. The Secretary of State is the former CEO of ExxonMobil.
Yeah. So I voted against Rex Tillerson becoming the Secretary of State. ExxonMobil controls an area inside of Russia, which is the size of Wyoming, for drilling for natural gas and oil. It's a fundamental conflict of interest. Rex Tillerson shouldn't have the job. I asked Rex Tillerson in the confirmation hearing if he would recuse himself from any action on any matter dealing with ExxonMobil during the entire time that he was Secretary of State, and Rex Tillerson refused to recuse himself.
Well, Senator Markey, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Senator Ed Markey is the Massachusetts senator, yes, from the great state of Massachusetts. As we turn now to the Oregon senator, Senator Jeff Merkley, who we interviewed just before this news conference. This is Democracy Now! We're broadcasting from the People's Climate March, an historic five-hour broadcast that's going out around the world. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! And we're standing with Senator Jeff Merkley, the senator of Oregon, a Democrat, who's standing in front of his, I guess you could call it your second home, the Capitol.
Well, certainly it's where I have to get to every week to fight the battle on federal legislation. But I only got one home, that's Oregon.
What are you doing right now in Congress around this issue of climate change?
So yesterday, in partnership with a whole bunch of environmental groups and social justice groups, I introduced 100 by 50. It's a phrase I want everyone in the country to hear multitudinous times, 100 by 50, 100% clean and renewable energy by the year 2050. It's a goal that we've got to get completely off fossil fuels, no more burning in any sector of the energy economy, and it's a timeline. And to get there, we have to move urgently, passionately, quickly. Time is not on our side.
So you introduced this with Senator Sanders?
Yes, with Senator Sanders, Senator Markey, and Senator Cory Booker.
So how do you expect to get it through a Republican-led Senate?
Well, often you introduce legislation to prepare for the moment when you can get it through. And right now, we have a Koch brother cartel. The oil and coal and gas industry is blocking environmental action. But it's very helpful at the federal level to lay out the vision. It's a statement of values. It's also a call to action. But the real point is, let's paint that picture nationally, but then let's take action at the grassroots level. And that's what this march is all about today. It's grassroots action. It's folks going to their local place of worship and saying, we need a 100 by 50 plan, and what are we going to do in the next 3 years to stop our use of fossil fuels? Doing the same with their city council, with their club, with their neighbors, with so forth.
What exactly, though, does that mean? I mean, you've sketched it out. What would 100% renewable by 2050 mean?
It would mean a complete end of burning any form of fossil fuels. That's coal, that's natural gas, and that's oil.
And how would you achieve this?
Well, so in the bill, we lay out every sector of the energy economy, because each one's a little different. But one of the big strategies is to make sure that every electron on the grid is a green electron. Second of all, move as much of the energy economy onto the grid as possible. And then there'll be other difficult areas like commercial airplanes where we're probably going to have to go to some form of biofuels. But we've got to work on every sector.
So you mentioned a Koch brothers cartel. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that there's very rich people who own a whole lot of fossil fuels. They own coal, they own oil, they own natural gas, and they want to keep extracting it and burning it. They have no concern for what it's doing to the planet. Climate disruption is affecting us everywhere. It's affecting our forests, our oceans, and our oysters, and our coral reefs. It's affecting our farmers and irrigation for farming across the country. Huge impact on rural America, which I think is important to emphasize. This is not an urban issue. This is an everywhere issue.
So you, to say the least, were very critical of Rex Tillerson in his confirmation process as Secretary of State. Rex Tillerson, the former CEO of ExxonMobil, the largest private oil corporation in the world. Talk about your concerns then, and now that he is
burn them. And that is not the leadership we need to address the biggest threat facing our planet. And when in his confirmation hearings, we were pressing him on his understanding of the threat of climate disruption, he basically gave platitudes, like, well, it's something we need to think about and perhaps we need to be at the table, but no sense of the understanding of the damage, no understanding of the urgency, no understanding of the impact on human health. And so it's not the leadership that we need in order to address this grave threat to the planet.
You also questioned Scott Pruitt.
the Oklahoma Attorney General, who's become head of the EPA. You said you didn't want the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, to become the Polluter Protection Agency.
Yes, and unfortunately, Scott Pruitt has spent his career working with the fossil fuel cartel to take down environmental regulations, which increases the particulates in the air and contributes to lung cancer and to asthma, taking down the standards on mercury, and mercury is a biopersistent neurotoxin that affects the developing brains of our children, and so he's doing everything he can, this individual, Scott Pruitt, he's doing everything he can to make Americans sicker, less healthy, and more damaging to the environment.
We are here on the 100th day of the Trump presidency. Your evaluation?
100 disastrous days. Terrible days. One of the things that occurred during this 100 days was that the confirmation of President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court. This is a stolen Supreme Court seat. It's the first time in U.S. history that a seat has been stolen from one administration and delivered to another. And it was done to pack the court on behalf of the fossil fuel cartel. And so that is the that is going to be a huge damage for decades to come.
Explain what you mean, how that's related to, how the Supreme Court is related to climate change.
Yes, there's a court decision called Citizens United. It was a 5-4 decision. It allows dark money to be spent on unlimited numbers and without identity in campaigns throughout the nation. This money was used in 2014 to give the Republicans control of the U.S. Senate. And ever since then, the Republican majority have been the puppets, and the Koch brothers have been the puppeteers. And so it's very important to this industry, this coal, oil, natural gas industry, that they keep this dark money flowing, which means keeping a Supreme Court that does not understand we the people. We the people, and here we are, the People's Climate March. This is the foundation of our government. It is the vision the founders laid out in the first three words of the Constitution. We the people. They put it in supersized font so that when you look at the Constitution, you see that standing out, and that's the whole principle. But they are all about, this 5-4 decision of Citizens United was all about government by and for the powerful, for the privileged, and for the polluters.
And what do you make of marches like this, starting with the women's resistance the day after the inauguration, massive, and then the protests against Muslim Ban 1 and then Muslim Ban 2, the spontaneous outpouring of people to the airports, the tax day protests, immigrant rights protests on May Day, the March for Science. What difference does it make? I mean, you walk the hallowed halls of the Senate. Do you hear people?
Oh, I tell you that it has made an enormous difference. People's action has saved health care for 24 million Americans, which is a huge, huge victory.
How?
Because they filled the inboxes of the email, they flooded the phones, they thronged into the streets, and that message was not lost on the Republicans on Congress. And those Republicans who had said, hey, we're going to be with Trump because he says we're going to do a change to the health care system that will cover everyone at lower costs with better benefits, and then suddenly the bill they put forward, it doesn't cover everyone. It throws 24 million people off of health care. It's not at less cost, it's at more cost. They're driving up, the Republicans are driving up the cost of health care on the exchanges, and it certainly isn't better coverage. They're trying to gut the essential benefits provision of the Affordable Care Act. And so it's three strikes and you are out. And it's the people responding and saying, what you're planning to do is just wrong on every one of those issues. You are going to hurt the quality of life of my family. When my loved one gets sick, they're not going to be able to get care. If we do get care, we're going to be bankrupt. How dare you, Congress, do this to America? And their voices were definitely heard, and that's why they haven't been able to pass a bill through the House.
And they're exempting their own
their
coverage.
About President Trump.
Oh, they are speaking way too quietly. Absolutely, absolutely. Anyone with a moral conscience should be speaking extremely loudly and boldly right now.
Do you see him finishing out his term? He just said, what was it, a day ago, after saying nobody thought health care would be so difficult, he just said that the presidency was harder than he expected.
expected.
Well, I think when he said in regard to health care, he said, who knew healthcare is so complicated? I mean, we have a president who has very little understanding of the core issues facing America. He spent his life being the front cheerleader for big development projects while his professional team took over for the details. He's been all about spending his life saying, well, this will be wonderful, and this will be bold, and this will be beautiful, it'll be a wonderful success, and then handing it over to others. He has no understanding of the complexities of the challenges we face, and quite frankly, no curiosity, intellectual curiosity, and no compassion for making the world a better place. And so we have a president who's really the wrong man for the job. It's unfortunate he's there. We got to take him out in 4 years. And meanwhile, we've got to have people's action like we are here in this march today.
An issue that connects to the environment is nuclear war, to put it mildly. Right now, as we stand here, the revving up of tensions with North Korea and Iran, the dropping of the largest non-nuclear bomb in ever dropped. It was developed by President Bush. He didn't drop it. President Obama didn't drop it. President Trump did in the first few weeks of his presidency. What are you concerned about what's happening here, and what do you think should happen with North Korea right now?
Very, very concerned about North Korea. The situation you have there is a country that already has nuclear weapons. The president and the Secretary of State have said their mission is to remove those nuclear weapons from North Korea. And there's only two ways to do that. One is for China to apply enough pressure that they voluntarily give up their nuclear program. There's virtually nobody in the national security world who thinks China can pressure them that much. I mean, if they cut off North Korea completely, the regime in North Korea still wants to hold on to those weapons. And the other is military action. So we have a tremendous space for miscommunication that leads to a disastrous war. And you could have, for example, tonight, you could have a ballistic missile test. Tonight, you could have the United States respond by attacking the missile launch site. Then you could have North Korea respond by attacking Seoul, tens of thousands of people dead in a few hours, and then U.S. Descending on North Korea, but we won't be able to take out their nuclear bombs, which are hidden, to make sure that foreign power can't get them. And then you have the risk of a nuclear bomb going off somewhere in the world. It could be in a cargo container. It could be on a boat, anywhere. So this is a very dangerous situation. We need very serious individuals, understanding that the application of pressure then has to have an off-ranch for a goal that can be accomplished and make the world more stable. And so I'm hoping, I'm praying that wise and thoughtful minds in the military world will be in control of this policy and not Donald Trump.
Were you one of the senators who got on the bus and went to the White House to be debriefed? I know Senator Sanders did not go.
Yes, I did go, and I think this is a very important issue. I wanted to hear what the administration had to say. President Trump came from out behind a curtain, spoke for a few minutes, and disappeared. And we learned nothing you couldn't learn in the newspapers.
So why'd they do it?
I think it was all theater. All theater. Thank you so much.
Senator Merkley, thanks so much.
From Oregon, that's Amy Goodman after the press conference. Wanted to mention I don't know how they're covering the march itself, but they've been prepackaging some programming. This is on both Free Speech TV and Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is pretty stable now. They were glitching a little bit earlier. And there is the 2-4 event at Grace Lutheran on 300 block of South Prospect. Inside because of the foreboding weather of the day, supposedly. I haven't looked at the radar lately, but there's a chance of four inches of rain is what I remember seeing yesterday. The terrible thing that happened yesterday, according to Senator Markey from Massachusetts, I'd Google it, and what happened is the EPA website yesterday removed the climate science site from public view. 2 decades. There was some material that was cited directly contradicting the head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, and that is no longer available for your preview. I assume it's available through archive.org. Here's Kumu Naidu, a South African activist with Greenpeace, if I recall.
Paying the first and most brutal price, where we've got climate refugees, land that's drying up, water sources that are disappearing and so on, which is already creating quite a catastrophic situation. We feel extremely hurt that in fact the countries that carry the biggest responsibility continue to deny their responsibility, but also continue to deny the very fact that the science is absolutely clear that we have to get off dirty energy. So we're here to just bring a voice to say to the people of the United States to continue to put pressure on their governments, to recognize that if we continue on the path that we are, that when history is recorded, the United States will go down as a country that has the greatest power to avert catastrophic climate change, but abuse that power and carry the biggest responsibility for the crisis that we are currently heading towards. And people must be very clear. We are 5 minutes to midnight in terms of the amount of time we have to reverse things. It still can be done, but we need political will and we need Trump and Trump's policies to be resisted extremely strongly.
Well, can you talk about some of the concerns you have about the Trump administration and the number of climate deniers in his White House?
Well, firstly, you know, climate change offers us an opportunity. Because far too long we've lived in a world between north and south, developed, developing, rich and poor. Climate change should bring us to our sense that we get this right as rich and poor countries acting together, and we can actually secure the future of all our children. Right now, when Trump talks about the wall, for example, we would like to remind him from an African perspective that if you put a wall around Africa, the whole world will go out of business. People won't be able to use cell phones and so on. So we need to break away from the idea that addressing climate change should be about advantage and competition. We have to have a greater sense of common shared purpose. And if you look at the appointments that is made in terms of the kinds of people that and their track records, their huge investments in the fossil fuel industry, it's clear that like President George W. Bush appointed several people that did the bidding for the fossil fuel industry, Trump has even done more than what he has done. The fact that he's wanting to gut the Environmental Protecting Agency in the way that he's doing and so on is all extremely worrying signs, and it has implications not only for the people of the United States, but for the people of the world as a whole. And that is why it's important that Trump must recognize, and the Republicans that support him must recognize, that it's not only a groundswell and increasing numbers of American people that are resisting, they are actually the ones now that are the best and most eloquent supporters of terrorism. They are the best and most eloquent supporters of promoting anti-Americanism. And that is something that they need to revisit and change the policies. Otherwise, the United States will become more and more isolated from global public opinion, as is the case at the moment.
Well, what do you think the impact of this march is likely to be? I mean, you were there in the 2014 march in New York City. How do you think that climate march is likely to compare to this one?
Well, the fact that it's happening in the Capitol, the fact that it's happening on the 100 days of this disastrous presidency of Donald Trump is, I think, important to say that actually we're not going to stand by and let him get away with it. I think the numbers that I'm seeing look pretty good. I don't think we necessarily will have exactly the same numbers that we had in New York, but this is a very good show of strength. And what is most important about this gathering for me is the fact that frontline communities from the United States are in the front line here, that they are indigenous peoples from various parts of the US and Canada that are here is very important. The fact that trade unions are here. You know, I'll tell you, 10 years ago when one was marching, you wouldn't have that same presence of, for example, the trade union movement. So I'm very pleased to see that nobody can say that this is just people who care about forests and care about animals. These are people who care about a broad spectrum of issues, including caring about nature. I think it's very important that people realize that, you know, environmentalists like me say things like save the planet, save the environment. People must realize the planet actually does not need saving. That if we continue on the path that we are and continue to warm the planet, the end result will be we will be gone as a species. The planet will still be here. The truth be said, if we become extinct as a species, the oceans will recover, the forests will replenish and so on. So understand that the struggle that we are engaged in is whether humanity can fashion a way to coexist with nature in a mutually interdependent relationship for centuries to come. And put differently, this struggle is fundamentally about securing our children and their children's futures. And therefore, opportunities like this for parents and grandparents and people who are planning to be parents to come out and say, not in my name, is important. But let's be very honest, we're going to need about 1,000 of these kinds of marches on an ongoing basis if we are going to be able to wrestle power from and to have the kind of policy. You know, Trump must recognize that denialism is not a policy, right? You cannot have people saying different things. You cannot. And the one thing that Yulia talked about a lot in the march and interviews and so on is about we must protect the Paris Declaration. So let me just say this very clearly. From an African perspective, the Paris Declaration simply gave us a chance to live to fight another day. It is far from a perfect solution to the problem. It's still not as ambitious as it needs to be.
That's Kumi Naidu speaking with one of the people from Democracy Now. That's part of the five-hour coverage of the Climate March. There is a climate march or activity event at Grace Lutheran Church today in the afternoon at 2 to 4. This evening, there are three CD release parties that I know of, the Mean Lids at Channing Murray, Katie Flynn at Memphis on Main, Sun Stereo at Canopy Club, and then there's the WEFT benefit for the Grateful Dead Hour at the Clark Bar at 9 o'clock, a reuniting of a band called Super Mazoom Zoom doing African music with a Zambian woman singer that's brilliant, and there was one other one that I can't remember now. But it's time for me to play some community support, underwriting sort of announcement, and then we'll get to this week's edition of CU Progressive News. Thanks for listening. Opinions you hear are those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others at the station. Again, if you can't get to Democracy Now! Because it's overloaded, it's being twinned on Free Speech TV. So.
This hour of programming is brought to you